As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to Allocation Disorder. I am Sam Stasekull, joined as always by Paul Tenorio, my colleague at The Athletic. Paul, the U.S. men's national team returned to the field for the first time in, I think, like 34 years today. We are recording on Thursday evening. They drew Wales 0-0, and if a 0-0 friendly draw against Wales is, I don't know, was that their B team? If that could like count as like a World Cup victory in a final on Twitter, then I think, you know, that was achieved today. But let's just dive right into it. How are you doing? What did you think of that game? What were your main takeaways? Were you as over the moon as some people were on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm going to try to we'll try to make this a little bit different. I know Taylor and Joe have done a whole show
yes,
on this.
Thank you for doing my job for me here.
But you know, I just finished writing about it, so obviously it's top of mind for me. Yeah, I think, you know, I kind of joked with you. I sent you a message saying that you were going to hate my story. I sent it to my buddy Dylan Hernandez as well, just because I always like to run, like, any optimistic opinion I have about the national team past you two before I write it. So I get
it's really making me reevaluate just like my whole approach to life, by
yeah,
the way. Just
yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, Sam's going to really hate this story because it's positive. I'm yeah. like, oh, all right.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it was. But you actually said you also were feeling positive. Look, it was a good performance. You know, I'm a believer in the idea that results and friendlies don't matter. It's about how you play. It's about what you're trying to accomplish. And did you make progress in those areas? And I think for me, when I looked at this performance, there were two things that really were going to matter to me. The first was what the midfield looked like with Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie. Great. It was the best part of the game for the U.S. Weston McKennie had his best game, I thought, in a U.S. uniform. Turns out playing for Juventus might make you a better and more confident player, who would have figured. The second was the play of the wingers. Originally, I thought it was going to be Christian Pulisic and Gio Reyna. Obviously, Pulisic's not playing. He's back with Chelsea. Gio Reyna, I thought, struggled a little bit in this game. Wasn't as strong as I was hoping, but you remind yourself he's 17 years old. And so you kind of, and in making his debut, you kind of put that a little bit to the side and say, okay, there were some problems in the final third. These are, you know, areas that are going to improve just over time. And when you put in the best player on the team back into the lineup, overall though, you know, you look at it, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, Serginho Dest, John Brooks, you know, probably the four of the five best players on the field. And the fifth was Yunus Musa for the U.S. who, you know, they're trying to convince to switch to the national team program. So overall, I thought it was a really, really positive performance. And certainly something to be optimistic about. And Sam, I think you felt pretty much the same way I did for the most part.
Yeah, certainly agree on all the assessments you just made of all of those players, for sure. You know, the main thing here is just putting it in the broader context. How many guys made their debuts today?
Six.
Six. the lineup was full of guys in their teens and their early 20s, inexperienced group with 2 days of training together that has never played together like at all. This is just the start for these guys, right? And so there were naturally going to be some shakier moments and times on the field when they didn't really look like they were knowing how to play together. And that was to be expected, and that happened, right? And that's fine. I didn't think it was like an amazing performance or anything like that. But for me, there were clear building blocks, right? There were things that you could point at and say, oh, like we can get excited about that. And there's so much room to grow, right? Already, just based off of what we've seen some of these players do with their club teams, right? So, I mean, you mentioned it. It's Adams and McKennie, right? That, I mean, we were talking before the show. You said it just now. You said it's the best you've ever seen McKennie play for the U.S. I think it's the best maybe I've ever seen McKennie play. And, like, I'm sure he had some very good games for Schalke over the years that I missed. I wasn't watching every single weekend, to be fair. But him and Adams just really paired well together. Adams was really disciplined, I thought, positionally. It's kind of everything you want in that number six. He can cover a ton of ground. He wasn't asked to do a ton with the ball at his feet. And I think that's fine, right? Like, there's nothing wrong with that. The U.S. has a lot of talented players in front of him that you want them to be doing things with the ball. You know, you mentioned Gio Reyna. He wasn't great. Sebastian Legette is a false nine, was like kind of a weird experiment, born out of necessity, right? Josh Sargent was not allowed to go by Werder Bremen, his club team. There wasn't a number nine with, well, I guess Tim Weah has been capped before, but he's sort of a number nine, sort of a winger. So there wasn't an out and out number nine with a cap on the roster. So, you know, like, it's fine. I think Weston McKennie had a good quote after the game about how guys weren't really making runs in behind and weren't really stretching the field. And like the biggest vertical threat for the U.S. was maybe Sergiño Dest, who's your right back.
Which, by the way, that's by design to a certain extent. Like, Greg Berhalter wants Sergiño Dest bombing forward. And he even said in the after the game, I thought Sergiño Dest was really good. Greg Berhalter was like, I think he can be better. We want to see more out of him in the final third. He's like, I really want to use his attacking ability.
He put a great ball in that I think if you have a center forward playing, probably gets on the end of it and hopefully scores. That, you know, no fault to Sebastian Legette here. I'm not here to like crucify that guy. Like, he was playing a position that, I mean, who knows if he's ever even played that position. He certainly hasn't in years. and I thought he did okay, honestly. But the wingers weren't really getting in behind. Weston McKennie's quote was kind of how everyone is comfortable with the ball at their feet and everyone sort of came to the ball and made the spaces tighter against a Wales team that was defending in a pretty low type block to begin with. So that made it a little difficult at times, but you could see the few moments where the U.S. did get vertical quickly, right? And there was one where Musa was on the ball and made that really, really long run through midfield. That was probably like what, like a 40, 50 yard run, maybe even longer than that. And so you see these flashes and you see Adams and McKennie playing well together, playing well with each other. And you see Reyna not having a great game, but knowing what he's capable of, because you've seen what he's capable of with Dortmund, knowing what Pulisic is capable of, and he's not even there. And it's hard not to get excited for this team, right? I think there's a lot of room to grow, a lot of potential. I don't think it's going to be smooth sailing all the way. They're still very young. Like, this is a really young national team. Like,
yeah, the fourth youngest lineup ever tonight for a U.S. national team that played. And so, that's with John Brooks on the field. That's with Sebastian Legette on the field.
Old man John Brooks, who's what, like 28?
27, I think, yeah.
Yeah. yeah, he's ancient. So I think a lot to be encouraged by. Still a lot of work to be done. It wasn't a perfect performance by any means, but a decent starting point. And like I said, there were some moments there where it's like, okay, damn, maybe you're working with something here in ways that we haven't been working with something in the past. Now they actually need to go out and realize that potential over the next 2/5.5 years ahead of the next two World Cups, basically.
Yeah, I'm just going to make two quick points. The first is you kind of brought up the two quotes from Weston and Tyler. I think if you're going to read my story, that's the reason to read them. Tyler's point.
So don't read them here. Otherwise, they won't read your story.
Well, I'm not going to read the quote, but the point was that, you know, two training sessions matters when you have a team that's never really been together. And they you have a tendency when you don't train together to fall into the habits of what you do train, which is what your club team's tactics are. And I think that probably contributed to some of what Weston McKennie was talking about with Gio Reyna and Conrad De La Fuente. He doesn't mention them by name in the quote, but that there are no runs in behind. The whole system of a false nine is designed to have runs in behind the back line from the wingers. So when those runs aren't happening, that's a problem for the system that is designed for those runs.
And Sebastian LeJet's fault.
Right, right, exactly. So I, you know, you can chalk that up to lack of time together, right, with a really young team. The second thing I'm going to say is, for as many positives as you can pull out of this performance, and there were positives to pull, I think it's also worth remembering that there are other areas, other people to be excited about who aren't here, right? You mentioned Josh Sargent's not here, Christian Pulisic. We talked about, you know, Christian's the best player on
the
team.
Matt Turner.
Yeah, Matt Turner, of course. Of course, how could we forget? But, you know, Jozy Altidore, Jossy Zardes. I think there's going to be
Jordan Morris.
I think there's going to be a legitimate competition still at left back. Nothing Anthony Robinson did today has me convinced that he's going to be the starting left back. Yeah. So, you know, Brendan Aaronson, he's somebody who, if Yunus Musah doesn't commit, is going to be trying to fight to play into that midfield next to Weston McKennie.
Even if Yunus Musah does commit.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, that's going to be important. Because we're talking about potentially World Cup qualifying next fall being three games per window if we continue to have COVID delays. And, you know, if you're having three games per international window, you're rotating the heck out of your squad because you cannot play the same team three times in a week in World Cup qualifiers.
You don't think you can play like in San Pedro Sula on like Tuesday afternoon in the summertime when it's 100 million degrees out and then play at Azteca in altitude 4 days later and then play in like Harrison, New Jersey, like 2 days after that, and yep. With the same 11?
Maybe Tyler Adams can do those three things and
you know
and
what?
Look
These
fine.
Guys are soft. These young kids. This never would have happened back in Paul Caligiuri's day.
Yeah, exactly. Frank Klopas, let me tell you, he could play all three of those games. Probably now, still today.
Yeah.
He's fit enough. Anyway, so that's our little synopsis on this game. You should listen to Taylor and Joe's episode to get a full breakdown of the tactics of the game. I think so. I think we have so much to talk about with MLS, and I'm excited to hear some of Sam Stasekel's reporting. He's been busy. He's been on the phone all day talking to people.
Oh, and people.
So now let's switch it up. Let's go from Europe back to MLS.
Let me say one more thing before Panama. They're playing Panama on Monday in Austria. I would hope for largely the same group of players in that game. A few changes here or there. I would love to see a number nine from the start. But other than that, I would like to see the same midfield for the most part and the same wingers. And you know, let the kids who are going to take you there build chemistry and gel. We'll see if Berhalter does that. If I had to guess, I think he will. But I don't know if he said anything about that in his post-game presser today.
He didn't say anything. I think we have to be mindful of the fact that he probably has some deals worked out with some club teams of how many minutes guys are going to play. But he did say no players are going back to their clubs. I think that's indicative of the fact that you're going to see some minutes. I do think I would expect to see more of some guys like Chris Richards, for example.
Sure.
I think could end up starting.
Some changes here and there, but I'm thinking midfield forward. If you want to switch up the back line, I'm good with that. But
I would agree with that idea. I think he'll stick with the guys that, you know, he wants to get them reps, right? He wants to get them
reps.
He needs to. So I would anticipate that there won't be as many changes as maybe there normally would be in a window like this.
Hello, Allocation Disorder listeners. This is producer Taylor. Before Sam tries to change the subject, I wanted to give Paul a moment to talk about his belief in the benefits of well-tailored clothing. Paul, over to you. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Anyway, moving on. MLS, Major League Soccer. It is off this week, but it is affected by the international window. The playoffs begin on November 20th with the Eastern Conference play-in round. That is basically the two extra teams in the East. There are 10 teams that qualify out of the East, only 8 out of the West. So the two extras in the East have to play 7 and 8 in the East. 7 versus 10, Nashville against Miami, the expansion extravaganza, Super Bowl 2020. Very exciting. And Montreal against New England. So those are the two on Friday, and then you move into the conference quarterfinals in both conferences. Some games on Saturday, some games on Sunday, and some games on Tuesday. Now, because of COVID-19, because of the fact that this playoff schedule, you have to fit in a lot of games in a pretty short amount of time, and because of MLS, I think doing the right thing in terms of health and safety protocols and requiring that all players who leave the country, leave the U.S. or Canada, and go on international duty, have to quarantine for 9 days upon their return. I believe they get tested 6 times during those 9 days as well. They're going to miss playoff games, some of those players, and that's going to affect the season. We are going to run into a situation almost inevitably where a team's season ends with one of their stars, perhaps their biggest star player, sitting at home in quarantine because he went on international duty. And that is just, I mean, doesn't really get more 2020 than that, except it does, Paul. Here's how it gets more 2020 than this. Raul Ruiz Diaz, Seattle Sounders star striker, finished second in the league in goals, tied for second with 12. He's one of their big three with Jordan Morris and Nico Ladero. They're playing LAFC. He's on international duty with Peru. He is not going to miss that game. It's expected. Why, you ask, listener? It's because he got COVID last month while on international duty with Peru. And that sort of makes him what is called a quote-unquote recovered person. And basically, per CDC guidelines, in the 90 days after you contract the virus, they basically say you don't need to quarantine, you don't need to, you know, go undergo tests, because the statistical chance of you picking it up and carrying it again in those first 90 days is almost nil. And so Ruiz Diaz, in a bizarre twist of fate that could have only happened this year, is going to play for the Sounders in a game that Brian Rodriguez and Diego Rossi are most likely not going to play for LAFC because he got COVID last month at the right time. I mean, I can only assume the Sounders did that on purpose. So credit to them, you know, another real, real boss move by the defending champs. But anyway, Paul, any thoughts kind of on this overall topic, like any teams that kind of stick out in particular as going to be particularly, I guess, hurt by having guys in quarantine?
Yeah, well, I think there's two teams that stand out to me as being particularly hurt. The first is LAFC, right? Not having Rossi especially is just brutal for them. And playing Seattle in the first round already was a very difficult draw. So I think, you know, that's a massive loss.
So just to rewind, LAFC, Brian Rodriguez and Diego Rossi will both be with Uruguay. And Diego Palacios and Jose Cifuentes are both with Ecuador. So they're down 4. Seattle's down 2.5, if you include Ruiz Diaz. In addition to him, Javier Arriaga is with Ecuador and Gustav Svensson is with Sweden. So the Sounders will be without a couple of regular starters of their own as well.
Yeah, but I think the team that's most impacted by the absences is going to be Minnesota United. They're going to be without several starters. Jan Gregoš with Slovakia, Robin Lud with Finland.
Roman, get a load of that.
Roman Metanier with Madagascar, Kai Kamara with Sierra Leone. So that's 4 starters that are out. You add that in with the players that have been missing due to injury, right? Ike Opara, Luis Amarilla, yeah. Tyler Miller. They've had guys like Ozzy Alonso, Michael Boxall, Schoenfeld. They've all missed games with injury. Hassani Dotson. So who knows what this team's going to look like? We know 4 guys that won't be there for sure because of international duty. But this is going to be it's going to feel like a May or June midweek game for Minnesota U.S. Open Cup opening round where you rotate everybody.
They're picking up guys off the street, Paul. Foster Langsdorf just signed there. They signed a guy who was playing in USL like 3 weeks ago.
Signed 3 of them.
Yeah, they're just picking dudes up left and right. Like, if you're not careful, Adrian Heath might call you up, Paul. You might have to get in a car up to Minneapolis, try and play a game.
Listen, I think that I have a lot of Metanier-esque qualities in my right back career.
Do you have Metanier-esque qualities as well?
Yeah. Okay. Well, we always talk about my pronunciations on this show, never yours. You know, we need to.
You can change that. It's up to you, really.
Yeah. we'll talk about that later, co-host. Okay, but for now, I think Minnesota's probably the biggest impact. Are there other teams besides those that you think are going to be especially hurt, Sam? And also, I do want to loop back, you know, maybe even more so than the teams that are hurt more, and say there's really not a lot MLS could do here, right? I mean, I feel like this is the right decision.
I mean, there are a couple of things. Theoretically, you could have pushed the first round back to when the second round is now, which is like basically the weekend of Thanksgiving, the weekend of November 27th. What that would have done is set up a situation if you wanted to have a full 6 days before MLS Cup on December 12th, where you would have played the conference semifinal, or the conference quarterfinal, the conference semifinal, and the conference final all in a week, which would have been a pretty big lift for the most important games of the season. So I get why they didn't do that. We don't know what the TV windows are like, right? Weekends are crowded with football on ESPN and Fox Sports. So I'm sure that played a role in this. The league had good results, good ratings from the weekday playoff games last year. So I'm guessing they wanted some of that action again. And that's probably part of the calculus here. And the other thing is the CONCACAF Champions League is resuming on December 15th. So they couldn't move back at all, right? MLS Cup is on December 12th. There are three playoff teams that are going to be participating in the CCL when it kicks back off in Orlando on December 15th. So you can't push back any further, and you can't play these games any sooner because then you'd be in the international break. So yeah, rock and hard place. Basically, the only option was, okay, either play the quarterfinal, semifinal, and conference final in 6-7 days, or shorten the quarantine period, which, given the fact that, you know, science and all of the COVID cases that are on the rise across the country right now, probably would not have been a good idea. So, the league, you know, it's all about the least bad solutions, right? That's the story of 2020. And this is what the league felt the least bad solution was this time around. In terms of other teams that I'm kind of keeping an eye on, and I'll shut up here in a second, but Portland is one. Felipe Mora is going to be gone with Chile. Yaroslav Niezgoda is done for the year because of an ACL injury he suffered a couple of weeks ago. We obviously know Sebastian Blanco, a winger. He's also out for the year with an ACL. They basically have one striker left, and it's Jeremy Abobasi. And he's been great this year, primarily playing as a winger. But he's missed their last five games with a concussion. Now he is back in training, and he's, you know, if you're back in training now and the game isn't for 10 more days, you're probably going to be fine. So that's positive. But he hasn't played in a while. So it's going to be interesting to see what he looks like, particularly with an attack that's already kind of hampered. So that's one that I'm keeping an eye on. In terms of others, Miami and Nashville, Randall Leal for Nashville is not going to be there. Rodolfo Pizarro for Miami, not going to be there. He would actually miss their first two games if they were to advance. And those are kind of two of the, I hesitate to say attacking stars, more important attacking players for their respective club teams who have both struggled to put the ball in the back of the net this year.
I know we're going to probably save our playoff preview for next week. But I will say, now that I'm thinking about this Seattle LAFC game, I have Seattle as we're doing a playoff preview for The Athletic as my favorite to win the Western Conference, and also most likely to get bounced early in the playoffs because of this game against LAFC.
I mean, the kind of circumstances around Seattle with the draw for the playoff, they got LAFC. If they win, they probably play Portland. And if they win that, they would probably play Kansas City. So, which are arguably outside of Seattle, maybe you can make an argument the three other best teams in the league. Now, you know, some folks in the East would have an issue with that. But there's certainly three of the best other teams in the league. So brutal draw. And that happened because I think of two stoppage time goals in two different games that Seattle was not involved in on Sunday, which is kind of wild. Anyway, please continue.
I was just an observation. It's very new Hutolo-esque postseason for the Seattle Sounders.
And it hasn't even started.
It hasn't even started yet. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see. This is a perfect, I think this is a very fitting way for the playoffs to go. It's dictated by COVID, just as this season has been dictated by COVID. And just like everything in our discussions about MLS this year has been dictated by COVID, our reporting, all of it, it just reinforces how different this year has been and how we have just to talk about the
just in case we need another reminder.
Yeah, I mean, we have to talk about these competitions differently than we do any other year. And that's not just to diminish the results as anything different, but they're different. They're definitely different.
I mean, you can make an argument it enhances, right? I mean, I don't think I would make that argument. I wouldn't make the argument that it lessens. It's just different, right? It's harder in some ways. It's maybe easier in some ways. I don't know. One team, actually, and actually one other note on LAFC Seattle, Christian Torres played for LAFC in their decision day match. He started the game. Brian Rodriguez did not. He's 16. He's a homegrown. He looked okay in that game, by the way. Potential breakout playoff star, perhaps. Name to keep an eye on, maybe. I say this, Bob Bradley probably won't start him now. But, you know, whatever. Maybe
just
Bob's
purely
listening
out of spite.
And he can send us an email about it.
Purely out of spite, he won't start him. He heard you say this on the show, and he's going to do it out of spite.
I mean, you said it, not me, okay? Just to be clear.
Speaking of homegrowns, Sam, can we talk?
Transition.
Can we transition and talk for a second about the Chicago Fire?
Whoa,
bringing 27 people back for next season on their roster. This is a team that finished in 11th place. And the reason that they're bringing back so many is because their roster is made up almost entirely of homegrown players, right? Almost nobody played. Like they played these homegrown players very, very few minutes, and yet they're bringing them all back. They're all coming back. So,
I mean, you can't cut the 15-year-old that you haven't given a chance to play yet. That doesn't seem fair.
Well, it's not just the 15-year-olds. You know, they re-upped Nicholas Slonina, the center back. He's 19.
He's 18?
He's 19, okay. You know, I just think it's an interesting... You look at who they brought back, you know, Elliot Collier, Wyatt Amsberg, both had their options picked up. Just the logistics of the roster, with guys coming back from season-ending injury, the Fire have some decisions to make in the sense of they're going to have to... I mean, you're counting the number of homegrowns here. You're going to have to send guys out on season-long loans to open spots up. But then, even then, you're working with a senior roster. No, they're going to have to trade for him. They have 8 internationals already. They're going to have to trade for international spots or get guys green cards, which I do think that they're,
that
you know, we know they're probably working on those, right? But I just think it's interesting to me because you're going to have 17, something like 15, 16, 17. I'm looking at their roster right now. Senior roster spots taken going into next year.
Out of 20, for those who don't
know. Yeah, 17 out of 20 senior roster spots taken for next year. So you have 3 senior roster spots to fill, and then the rest is going to be supplemental roster spots based on homegrowns you can move out. So I'm interested. I thought it was intriguing.
So basically what you're telling me is that the Fire, who finished in 11th place in the Eastern Conference, were one of 4 teams out of 14 to not make the playoffs, are just running it back in 2021. They're like, let's do it again, basically.
Yeah, and partly because they had to, right? They gave out a lot of they had a lot of contracts that were multiple years, right? So you can't do anything about that.
We knew this, right? We knew this already. I feel like we've talked about it on the show before. Like,
yeah, I think they signed 22
like
guys.
They signed a lot of guys to multi-year deals. They picked up options on others, and you know, a lot of their senior spots were already spoken for, like in June, right? We didn't even need to wait till the end of the season. So I don't know. To quote a famous movie, it's a bold move, Cotton. See how it works out for him.
I was actually intrigued to see where this. where this roster build goes, and now I'm a little less intrigued. I've dropped it down my offseason intrigue.
I mean, there's nothing to be intrigued about.
Yeah, there's only, you know, 3 to 4 signings. I mean, maybe they can move some guys to try to open some space. I'm looking at the roster and trying to figure out
make some trades.
Who's worthy of trades? Like, who are you calling the Chicago Fire about? Johan Kapelhoff last year had some interest, but he was hurt all year.
Yeah, he's on a big number too. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, all it takes is one buyer, and a lot of these lower end of the roster guys do move from time to time. So,
and there is an expansion team. You know, there is an expansion team.
Austin FC expansion draft coming up. Only if I believe there are like 10 teams that are not in the draft this year because they had a guy picked last season, so they're protected this year. We can get to that on a later show. I wanted to talk about a team that's actually still playing really briefly. Sporting Kansas City. I believe your favorite team in the world, Paul. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, huge fan of Sporting KC.
Big KC guy. Anyway, they actually don't have any international absences, period. They're one of the few teams in the playoffs that won't be dealing with that at all. So good for them on that front. I just wanted to give some credit. Sporting KC, over the years, has run into the same problem time and time again at the end of seasons. Peter Vermes leans on a core. They play an aggressive, physical style, wears people down, wears themselves down. And at the end of the year, they get a little tired, and they've had a lot of early round playoff exits over the years. Last year was a complete disaster for them. They had a lot of injuries, and they didn't even make the playoffs. And this year, they had a lot of injuries. They had some guys break down. They had star players go on international duty and miss a lot of games. And they won the Western Conference. So credit to them. They hit on a ton of moves this offseason. Alan Pulido is the highlight, but you know he missed about half of their games. Gadi Kinda, who they re-upped, I think they permanently acquired him from a loan deal. He's been very solid for them. Felipe, one of their star players, the DP, he's been out all year. he hasn't played like at all. You know, Matt Beisler has not been regular Matt Beisler. Graham Zusi's out for the season, and they've had a really good year. So credit to them for fixing the issues that they've had in the past, building a deep roster, rotating the squad, and figuring it out here to a place where the Western Conference runs through KC. So credit to Peter Vermes and co down there. I just wanted to give a little love, little shout out. You know, I'm all about love, despite your text to me about your USMNT story earlier.
Yeah, I only speak to you every day for an average like 2 to 3 hours a day, and I would say most of our conversation's been positive.
Thank you. Makes me feel better.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Hey folks, this is Taylor from the Total Soccer Show, reminding you that we are inching ever closer to the start of the summer transfer window, which means there are teams that will buy and sell their players early, there are teams that will leave that business very late, and there are teams that will operate in between. But no matter what, it's going to be a chaotic situation. There's going to be offers coming through willy-nilly. There's going to be transactions to be tracked and processed and make sure that enough money is there. There's going to be probably angry clubs calling to complain. There are many things to deal with. And unfortunately for those clubs, there is no sort of business tool that makes things easier, makes transactions simpler, gets the business done efficiently and effectively. But for the small businesses around the globe, there is such a service, Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autographed apparel or selling sleek kits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And I really appreciate that about Shopify. No matter how big you are, no matter how fast you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. That's as many countries as we'll be selling players in the transfer window this summer. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/TSS, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/TSS.
Credit to Peter Vermees. Look, I am somebody who believes that Peter has done, you know, one of the better jobs over the long haul in this league. You know, traditionally, Sporting Kansas City was not a big spender. Changed that this year. They actually went out and spent decent money.
On Pulido.
Yeah, on Pulido. And this option for Gadi Kinda was several million dollars, from according to reports. So, good for them. I think another element to this is trying to bring some homegrowns through Kansas City. You know, they've been one of the more aggressive teams in recruiting outside of the Kansas City area. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd like to see those players continue to come through and to feature for Sporting.
And they did more this year.
They did more this year for sure. It's part of their plan. It's part of their model for sure. They're definitely putting the money into it. So, yeah, you get rewarded for it. That just kind of breeds more success, I think, more confidence in the design of the system, the design of player identification and how you want to put your roster together.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think it's positive. Should we keep just like giving out love? Should we keep riding the love train? Is that a weird thing to
say?
Sam,
I feel like you are all about giving out the love tonight. And so I'm going to set you up with another one. Supporter Shield winners, Philadelphia Union. Your favorite team in MLS this year, by far.
No, that's Nashville. Philadelphia is my second favorite team. Yeah, so I had a long conversation this morning with Jim Curtin. We spoke for about 45 minutes. Jim Curtin, by the way, is an incredible quote. That man knows how to tell a story. I'm a little jealous of him in that way, because he's like a really good soccer coach and he can tell a story. And it's like, I think I can tell a story, but I'm not a really good soccer coach. So like, I'm a little one dimensional compared to Jim Curtin. I need to step my game up. But yeah, I had a really long talk to him today, and I wanted to talk about the Philadelphia Union because I feel like the narrative around them, and while I get it and while it's partially true, it's all about homegrowns, right, Paul? It's Brendan Aaronson getting sold to Salzburg. It's Mark McKenzie. And, oh, wait a minute, those are the only two homegrown guys that start games for them. Like, you have Anthony Fontana, who had a really good year, by the way, and you have Matthew Real, who contributed, and you have Matt Fries, who stepped into goal here on decision day and played well, made a couple big saves and contributed to that. So I don't mean to take away from these other guys, but it's not like they're getting these contributions in droves. They're getting big contributions from a more compact set of guys, and that's cool. But just saying academy homegrowns about the Union, it sells them short. This is a team that is near the bottom of the league in overall spending on their roster. And they are deserving Supporters Shield champions because, in part, of the academy, like we were just talking about, the homegrowns, but also, equally and perhaps more, in part because they knock all of their signings out of the park. It's remarkable when you look at their record, right? So their DPs are Jamiro Montero and Ale Bedoya are their two like big ticket DPs. Those are not big ticket DPs in terms of overall spend in MLS. I don't know where they would rank. I would guess they would be pretty low in the overall ranking of DP salaries and all that jazz. They're both excellent players for that team, right? Excellent players for that team. You have TAM signings, Sergio Santos, Jacob Glesnes in the back. Both really solid players. You have draftees, right? Andre Blake, Ray Gattis, Jack Elliott. Huge contributors to that team. Andre Blake's an MVP finalist. He's a goalkeeper. That's weird.
I like that.
Really,
I like that we're going back
and then
like,
you have...
Sorry, real quick. I like that you're going back to like the 1996 MLS super draft for Ray Gattis. Respect to Ray Gattis, but it's been a while since he got drafted.
I mean, like, he did get drafted by the Union, like, in 2012. I think Ray Gattis and I are the same age. Anyway, the West Virginia University to Philadelphia Union pipeline between him and Jack Elliott is strong, okay? Philadelphia Mountaineers, baby, for life. Anyway, so you have that end. And then you have these random international signings that they pluck out of nowhere. Kai Wagner, German third division, comes to MLS and one of the best fullbacks in the league. Jose Martinez, Curtin told me today that man is on $120,000 a year. He's been maybe the second best defensive mid in MLS this season. One of the top. He's been excellent for them. Venezuelan international now. Kasper Shabilko, right? He was a free agent. They picked him up sort of on a trial in September of 2018 and then re-signed him for the following season. He scored a bunch of goals. He hasn't been as great this year, but he's still a solid contributor. They have no margin for error, basically, and they lived within that margin for error this year. And a lot of that is kind of their ability to go out and look in these places where most teams don't look. The German third division, the Venezuelan league, for a 24 or 25-year-old that Martinez is, and find kind of these diamonds in the dirt, right? Hit on their DPs, have the academy guys contribute in meaningful ways, and it's all holistic. It's all together. And oh, by the way, they don't get hurt either, which is a huge thing when you're talking about winning a supporter's shield on a budget. So while we're giving out the love to the Philadelphia Union for kind of figuring it out. And when you think about them as a whole. It's not just the academy there. That's a big part of what they're doing. And if they're going to sustain this level of success, it's going to need to be an even bigger part of what they're doing. But there's a lot of things that are good that are going on in Philly.
I want to give credit to Ernst Tanner, which you just
and
did
Chris
with
Albright.
That. With,
and
Chris
Albright, too.
For sure. Yeah. But I do want to point out that Ernst Tanner came in without knowing the league, obviously had Chris Albright there. Ernie Stewart did add some guys that have helped this roster too before him. And you know, I think Jim Curtin clearly has been involved since he was coaching in the academy. And definitely keep an eye out for Sam's story. It's going to be a good one. But I think maybe that we should talk about Ernst Tanner not just having the eye for these deals that you just went through. But I think that the Union front office in general, with their willingness to sell and move players, have maximized their assets, academy assets and otherwise. The amount of money that they traded, that they were able to gain through trades, Austin Trusty, Keegan Rosenberry, Derek Jones, two of those are homegrowns. The other one could have been a homegrown, but MLS rules wouldn't allow it, so he went through the draft. They brought in, I think it was $1.225 million in allocation money for those three players. I don't think anyone would have turned, like, I think that's a great return on investment for those three players.
Yeah.
And then you add in Brendan Aaronson being sold. That means you've brought in essentially $2 million
in allocation
money in two seasons of work for Ernst Tanner from homegrowns. Has there been a better return by any MLS team? I don't think so.
Atlanta, maybe? When they traded Nagby and sold.
No,
that wasn't the same window.
For me, it's just... It was just really savvy, and it shows that you don't only have to cash in on your homegrown players by selling them overseas.
Yeah, sometimes, internal transfer market, so to speak.
Yeah, sometimes the smartest move with a player is that, okay, we're not going to get anything more out of him here, and we're going to move him on. And that these players do have value elsewhere in the league, and maybe they're going to perform well. You know, Keegan Rosenberry has played for Colorado. You know, Derek Jones has put in some good minutes for Nashville this year, you know?
Sometimes as a forward, which is not at all what he played.
Well, because they need somebody who's just going to run and work, right? And he's done well to do that. He's filled the role that they've asked him to fill. That's okay. It's okay if you sell a player and they're successful somewhere else. It doesn't mean that you made the wrong decision. Sometimes it does, but it doesn't always mean that. No. And you have to understand that it's part of the business to sell players. And I can tell you right now, there's no fans in Philadelphia that are angry about trading homegrowns when you're winning a supporter shield. So credit to the Philadelphia Union, their front office, for, you know, whatever system they're using to find players kind of under the radar and low prices and to hit on them. It's great. And I think that that everyone at that organization deserves credit for not just finding the talent, but then maximizing it. So so big ups to Jim Curtin, Ern Tanner, Chris Albright. A very positive show today.
You said big ups, and I thought of Chet Hayes, Chet Hanks. For those of you who don't know, just Google it. It's Tom Hanks' son, and he doesn't talk like he's Tom Hanks' son. Put it like that. Fun story about Jim Curtin. His first coaching session in the Philadelphia Union youth program in 2010, first year in club history. He was coaching 2-year-olds. No joke. He sent me a picture. Hilarious. So funny. He said he had a moment. His last game as a pro, they played against the Galaxy and David Beckham. And his next action as a soccer professional person was having like two, 3, and 4-year-olds like kick balls at his head while he had to like cover up and protect himself, which is probably a very humbling experience. Kind of a funny story, though. He's come a long way with that club over the years, for sure. Do we need to give out love to some more teams here, Paul? Did you have something to add about 2-year-olds? I know you're an expert.
Well, first of all, there's no 2-year-old that was able to kick a ball high enough to hit Jim Curtin in the head. He is a tall
I think he was on the ground.
He is probably a tall human being. That's all I'm saying. Yeah. No, I think I don't really have any more love to give out. I'm a little bit disappointed in our show for being so positive today. We're usually known as the most negative MLS podcast out there. I think that's one of our taglines.
All you people who text me, all you PR people, and you GMs, coaches, all you guys who text me saying, Sam, when are you going to give credit that we deserve? Well, gave some tonight. How about that? Paul?
I feel like that was like a humble brag. All you GMs and coaches texting me.
No. Well, yeah, I guess it was.
Hello, Allocation Disorder listeners. This is producer Taylor speaking. This is not an ad read. I just wanted to confirm what Paul just said. That was one hell of a humble brag by Sam.
Taylor, can you edit that out? I don't want to come across like that in this show.
We got to stop making requests of Taylor, because what he does with those requests is he alters them in the way he wants, and he tweets them out and he tags you in it so that people make fun of you for the whole rest of the week.
Don't tell them that. That's the secret.
We're
not supposed to say that out loud, man. You're ruining the conceit. What are you doing, dude? Come on.
This is producer Taylor one last time. I don't do that.
I've got no more love to give out. I was the only negative one on this podcast today, which is just a real turn in the way that this podcast usually goes. Yeah, I kind of was mean to the Chicago Fire, which is a tradition on this podcast, I feel like.
They kind of deserved it. But, you know, hey, whatever. You know, next week you can give out some, you know, early Christmas gifts or something. It's very early for that, but you can give them out all the same. Next week we will be back. I think we'll have a full kind of MLS playoff preview. Maybe some awards will be announced by then. We didn't talk about any awards tonight. Maybe we can do that some other time. But, you know, we'll be back with a full MLS playoff preview. The show, that show will be out before the playoffs begin. So we got a long time to go still. So, I'm glad we were able to give some credit tonight. I'm trying to think if there's any other teams I want to give credit to. I do want to give some credit to Nashville for making the playoffs. In seventh place, they would have made it in a regular season, a non-COVID season. So credit to them for that. Very curious to see how they built on this success. It's been ultra defensive for the most part, but the attack is coming to life here over the last few weeks. So credit to them. And, you know, just like everyone go out there and have fun and smile and be nice with each other. And I think the world will be a little bit better off, right, Paul?
Definitely. Who is this? And what have you done with my co-host?
And on that note, I'm Sam Stasekull. He's Paul Tenorio. This has been Allocation Disorder. Thanks for listening.